Did you know that Black Lives Matter was founded by a bunch of fat black lesbians?
Women?
Yeah, radical lesbian. I don't think they would want you to call them women.
So, what is your problem?
Welcome to The Fall Estate. I am Destiny Peterson. The Fall Estate is on Patreon. So click the Patreon link in the description to support our work. And I absolutely appreciate it. I have back with me a second time around, Alicia Fryson. She is a Howard University School of Law graduate and the former president of the UCLA African Study Union. Alicia, thank you so much for coming back on. Congratulations on graduating. Now you're a little lawyer, huh?
Thank you. Yes. Yes, I'm studying law right now.
That's amazing. And so are you in LA or are you in Washington right now?
New Orleans. I got a job out here. So I'm studying for the bar in Louisiana.
Oh, well, I wish you well with that.
Thank you.
So you were on my show about 3 years ago, thefallestate.tv. Now that you look back on that, what do you think about that interview?
It was a very interesting interview. It was unique. I still appreciate the way I engaged with you during the interview. It was very enlightening.
Yeah.
You don't get the chance to have many conversations with someone on the other side, basically.
Yeah.
So I appreciated the experience. I had the chance to share some light on the other side. But in a way, like, I still appreciate it. I got a lot of feedback from it. Crazy feedback.
It was amazing. People. Now that you are a lawyer, are you still a liberal or are you now conservative?
I don't like the idea of the binary, but if I had to pick a side, I would definitely say I'm liberal.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And are you still the same?
I am so far right now, I'm about to tip off the side. You look so young, it's hard to believe that you have graduated from law school. What type of lawyer are you? What type of law will you be practicing?
Criminal defense. I have an interest in criminal defense and also civil rights litigation. So I'm starting out as a criminal defense attorney.
Well, that's amazing. I really wish you well. The first time you were on my show, you were at UCLA and you were the president of the African Student Union. And you guys were demanding money from UCLA, something like $40 million endowment. Did you receive that?
We did.
And where did that money go?
So the money is basically, it's not necessarily a complete lump sum of money. It's an endowment. So it's a system where they're creating a pot, basically, to receive donations to the university appropriated specifically for the needs of Black students. So that could be when it comes to more resources for their community service programs or more resources for the tutorship programs that we have and the peer counseling programs that we have for students. It can also come in the form of financial aid or for the Black student housing. But it's not necessarily earmarked for one pot. It can also go into the African American Studies Department. I'm not hands-on with necessarily where all of it is going.
Right.
But kind of the general idea from what we agreed to.
Okay.
Because right after around the same time that we had our meeting, that's when all of our demands were actually met. So we had agreement about that then. Now 3 years later, almost all of them are enacted.
Amazing. Now that you are more mature, you've gone through Howard Law School, do you think it's time out for Blacks begging for free stuff? Will they ever stop begging, you think?
Well, the way you say begging is problematic in the first place.
What do you mean?
That's why we label it the way we do, as a demand, because it's essentially you're demanding what you're already owed. And the reason, it's an issue of equity, not an issue of I want more or I want something different. It's an issue that Black students have already been disproportionately discriminated against and not enrolled into universities like UCLA. And so with that, it's much difficult when you have many students coming into a university who have no connection to the university experience. So they don't have much guidance or resources or support. And so we're just asking for the little bit to level the playing field. So I don't think that, and especially going through law school and learning the law, inequity is read into, and it's read into the law, but it's actually in the law. And that's our system. There's a systematic problem with that. So because of that, I don't think the playing field will ever be leveled unless people continue to demand for what they're owed.
Amazing. I have, since you were on the show, I've spoken to Blacks, Hispanics, and whites from UCLA. And most of the Hispanics and whites say that the Blacks at UCLA are not really smart people, that they don't, the reason they're not getting in or they don't get in because they don't really study for the test and they're not really, they don't work hard because they've been trained that they could get it based on being, you know, being Black, and that the SAT scores and those things are not necessary for the Blacks, but all the other races have to earn their way except the Blacks. So they don't really like the Blacks because they're like pushing out people who work hard to get it simply because of color. What do you say to those people?
One, I don't know who you talk to, because my experience at UCLA was very much, there was a few that created a divisive environment, yes. But the Latino, Latinx community were some of my greatest allies and greatest friends at UCLA. And even some white students as well. But as far as that directly about admission rates and what goes into being admitted, first off, UCLA has a holistic admissions process. So they actually don't, they can't even see whether or not you're Black or white or Latino or anything on your actual application. Second of all, the numbers speak for itself. Of all of the Black students who actually are admitted, there's a commensurate rate, like the amount of students that apply. The issue isn't the application rate. It's not the admittance rate. It's the enrollment rate. So out of the applicants that apply, most Black students are actually admitted. But the issue is about the environment that makes them feel comfortable with enrolling. And the issue that I had taken issue that I took up when I was there was about the graduation rate as well. A substantially slimmer amount of them graduate.
But now, that's because they don't really try. You know how Blacks don't, nowadays, they don't have to put much effort in it. It's just about color, not character.
So I came in as a pre-law student, but my sister, as I told you back then, I'm a twin. My twin sister's me. Most Black students, I would probably say 2 out of 3 Black students coming into UCLA come into pre-med program at UCLA. And UCLA, as it was then, is now, as 10 years ago, it's the number one pre-med institution. And it's such a massive institution, it's a leader school. Their whole point in the pre-med departments or the different majors that are pre-med majors is to weed out students. And the easiest of that are the minority. So when you come in, most of the department, probably about 60% of the department will be Asian. I won't say 60%. You can probably split that. It'll probably be 40 and 40, Asian and white. And then there will be a very slim minority that are Latino and a very slim minority that are actually Black. And my sisters told me that the entire experience of being a pre-med, the most important thing is your ability to come into groups and work with each other. And now this is where microaggressions plays a huge part, because they are automatically pushed away because of that assumption of what you said, the presumption that a Black student is less than in intelligence and capability to move forward and work ethic. And it's really those notions that harm their experiences and also harm their academic progress at our institution, because it's all about your ability to come in.
But Alicia, the Blacks give that impression because they are always whining and begging. You never hear them just simply working hard, putting their best into it. They always whining about, oh, my color. I can't get it because of my color. So they give that impression that they are not smart enough or they don't work hard enough to do it. I want to ask you something. You could be honest with me, and I won't tell anyone, all right? If you needed a doctor a real serious doctor, and there was the white doctor, the Asian doctor, and the black doctor, which doctor would you choose first? Be honest.
A black doctor.
The white doctor?
A black doctor.
Why?
And the reason why is because my sister has done a lot of research in this area. Doctors are more likely to misdiagnose a black woman and a black person. And I'd like to have that interaction with another black person I'd like to have that experience with another black doctor, because I've already seen the data that shows that Asian doctors and even white doctors, when black women come into hospitals and complain of their issues, they're very quick to dismiss them and not believe them or think that they're lying or something. It sounds so foreign as a layperson, but when you're in medicine, I guess I kind of get it. But that concerns me. And black women die at higher rates when giving childbirth. There's so many issues with that. And so personally, I see that it's in my best health to have a doctor a part of my same race.
That's amazing. I want to ask you this. In all honesty, how was your education training at Howard University? Was it good, medium, or okay?
It was phenomenal. It was the most well-rounded experience of my life. Before going to law school, I told you about the options I had for law school. I was considering going to Tulane University and then later NYU University, NYU Law School. And I had the chance to actually visit Howard when I was younger. I did law camp there at age 16. It was my first time going away. And I had this amazing experience. And I went back there for law school, didn't realize it was the exact same place. I was disconnected a little bit. And it's something special to have the tough love beat into you through professors who have your best interests. Not all of my professors are black. I had a diversity of professors and diversity in thought, some that actually would agree with you on many values. And that one of those professors, I actually am very close to. It's actually one of my closest colleagues now. So it was a beautiful experience, I think, because it taught me I got to see it firsthand about how being blackness is not a monolith whatsoever. But additionally, because of the stereotypes that come with coming from a historically black institution,
Howard
is very keen on training their students to the best levels, to the highest levels, so that it's never a question about my capabilities as a lawyer. So, and I've had the chance to see it firsthand. I have some of the strongest writing skills and the strongest legal analysis skills. So I feel the most prepared, and I'm really great about the decision.
Do they have white students there at Howard?
Yes, they do.
They do have white. I've heard the word systemic racism. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I have.
And what is systemic racism exactly?
Systemic racism, and it's kind of redundant in a way, because racism is about an institution. It's an institution built off of taking advantage of somebody being the minority or being the subservient all the time. I kind of, as I'm studying law right now, I equate it to something called a servitude. It's basically like an estate gets the chance to take advantage of a subservient estate for the benefit of that other. And that's kind of simply what the system of racism is in every way. There isn't a functioning system without someone on the bottom for the top to gain.
And so it's just a made up thing in order to intimidate white people and take their free stuff?
No, not at all. And the irony is that white people made it, starting with our founders of the country, the institutions that built this nation and the institutions that continue to let it go. Like everything that goes with it is just an outgrowth of the institution, even through the prison industrial complex, our police institutions, even higher education still functions on that same system as well.
But that definition you gave doesn't define it. It sounds like just another made up word, like the word racism. Racism is a made up word too. We all know now that there's no such thing as racism. It's either right or wrong, good or evil. And so systemic racism sounds like just another word that the deceivers of good made up in order to keep blacks angry and out of it and to intimidate white people to take their stuff away from them. It just sounds like another made up word. You notice that?
So I'm confused about how racism can intimidate white people. What is the effect of racism intimidating white people? How does it hurt them?
Well, because black people hate white people more than white people can even think of hating blacks. And they're always robbing, killing, murdering, raping, and taking their hard-earned living away from them. And if there was such a thing as systemic racism, it seemed to me that would be the definition of it, where the blacks are doing it to the whites.
Well, that doesn't answer my question, but to address what you're saying about the always or about hate, black people actually consistently have been the quickest, I hate using that word, but forgiving in those type of situations.
What?
Yes, civil rights movement is the epitome of it. The civil rights movement, we have the image of, that is the quintessential image of racism. You have the police with dogs and fire hose hosing down black kids on the street, and you never see one image of a black child, a black person at all lift their fists to hit them. But they're all in prison for opposing Jim Crow laws.
But why? Then what you do when you have a riot, you're supposed to take the dogs and the water fountain out there to disperse the rioters.
You call a riot someone walking down the street because they're walking on the side of the street that a black person isn't allowed to walk down?
But they were burning and destroying as they are today.
You didn't touch the thing. They didn't. Actually, the people who were burning.
I was down there. I saw it. I lived there. I grew up there. And I remember that.
Actually burning things down were the white people. The white people were the ones who were actually committing extremism on American soil.
No, it was the blacks who were destroying the property of others.
So it was the black people who burnt down their own Baptist church and killed their own baby girls in a Baptist church?
Well, you have incidents like that happening because the whites get mad at the blacks and they go and do wrong things. That's why I tell the whites not to get angry. Because when you get angry, you come out fighting in the wrong way. And the blacks are going to say, see, I told you, systemic racism. But if you don't get angry and deal with things in the right way, the blacks can't falsely accuse the whites.
I think you're talking more about prejudice rather than systemic racism. Because systemic racism is about essentially that system that people are opposing. People are opposing the laws. They're opposing the code of silence that keeps black people out of certain environments, out of higher education, out of the corporate world or things of that nature. I think you gave a really good example when you said that because three black girls had to die in a church because of a bombing of a KKK member, it's just because black people got angry. The one moment that a black person probably ever did get angry, it cost them their life. Like that, you see that? It's never going to be equal. A black person peacefully protests and he's thrown in jail and beaten. But the moment he speaks out, babies are dying. Black babies are dying. And what did those girls even do? And that literally in the situation of three girls who were killed
that's why whites can't get angry. Whites should not get angry. Speak up, but don't get angry. Because the blacks are going to accuse them for destruction. I want to ask this about systemic racism. If systemic racism existed, how do you explain, especially in America, how would you explain Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson, LeBron James, Beyonce, and her husband Jay-Z.
Huh? Beyonce?
Yeah, Beyonce and her husband Jay-Z. BET founder Robert Johnson, Oprah, and many, many more. How did they become so successful if systemic racism exists?
And I love this that you said that because they're the epitome of systemic racism. The reason why I say that is because there are these anomalies that white people love to showboat in front of black people and say, see, if you're just as amazing, if you have all these specially selected skills of this woman who knows how to sing, dance, act, kind of, and keep her hair looking dyed blonde or beautiful, then you too can be successful. If you know how to get on a stage and sing and dance, then you too can be successful. But what about the images of that aren't related to the typical stereotypes of what you've listed?
Like you're Oprah.
football player or a singer or a rapper. So how do you feel when you're told that you have to fit into this cookie cutter image to ever touch a level of success?
But no one tell me that. Only blacks say that to themselves, and they accuse others of being that way.
I never said that to myself. My mother never said that told that to me. That's not the image that black people perpetuate with themselves. That's actually what's being fed to us, the media. And I know, like, your president has talked a lot about the media, and I think I'm glad he has that conversation about it, but the way he's using it is not proper. It's proper when you talk about the images of black people being perpetuated in American society over centuries. Like, if we go all the way back to the early 1900s in Song of the South, the movie produced by Disney with black people on slave plantations, smiling, dancing, and these hideous black caricatures, that's the type of images that have been perpetuated in our media. And so another example, our first Emmy winner is a black woman playing a nanny. Those are the careers that are kind of pushed in front of black children of this is how you can be successful.
But the black children are getting worse images than that from their own homes and in the black community, because black people don't tend to have good moral character. They don't, you know, they wear saggy pants and they're gang members and they're complainers. They're getting the worst image from their own homes and their own communities.
I'll tell you something about that image. Even if it were true.
You know it's true.
That black people are gang members, or all of them are gang members, or that they all wear saggy pants. I can tell you that out of even the select few that may fit that description of what you stated, they're probably some of the most hardest working people you will ever know. Just because someone comes to life doesn't mean that they're any less hard of a worker or less capable than you or even the next white person.
Alicia, you want to repent for that? You know that's not true.
People I have met in my life. The fact that you're still hardworking on this show, that is beautiful. It's always present for us, no matter what side, no matter where.
If there is such thing as systemic racism, which I know doesn't exist, how did the fallen messiah, Barack Obama, and Big Mama Michelle become the president of the greatest country on this side of heaven if systemic racism exists? And then once he became president, he nearly destroyed America. We now have Obamagate. There was spying on the Great White Hope, Obama's administration, and Obama's still not in jail. And now they are multi-millionaires. He and Big Mama now live in Martha's Vineyard, one of the richest area, most beautiful area in the country. Why didn't the system stop that?
They don't live in Martha's Vineyard, but we're going to call them by their proper titles, President Barack Obama.
Well,
Michelle Obama.
He's not the president now. Thank God.
That title stays with him till he dies. That is the respect of the position of the title.
Unfortunately.
They don't live in Martha's Vineyard.
They just buy a home over there or something?
It's not in Martha's Vineyard. It's in a area, still a part of D.C., kind of Maryland, called Bethesda.
Oh, okay.
Martha's Vineyard is like, you can't live there. But so you're saying about how they were able to...
Yeah, why didn't the system stop them if systemic racism is real?
Great question. Systemic racism is real, but the way you're able to change it and you're able to change the images that people see is when you are able to have people of color, and particularly black people, who are able to intercept in these places of power, to be able to help, or even people who are sympathetic to the cause, or people who are sympathetic to giving more black people a voice. So for example, like, we all have someone who was not a black person who was there who helped us when we knew we couldn't count on a black person because of the systemic situation.
Amazing.
Black people aren't in positions of power. I know, like, you're older than me, so you could probably go all the way back to when you were younger. And I want to know, like, did you ever see an image of a black attorney when you were younger?
Yes.
You did?
Uh-huh.
Did you see many of them?
When I was younger and growing up under the Jim Crow law, laws down in Alabama, which was the Democratic Party, by the way, they were controlling the blacks.
Right.
There were black businessmen and women. They bought land. They built houses. They built homes. They went to universities around the country. And they came back educated as lawyers and businessmen and women. As a matter of fact, nearly all the kids from my class became professionals. They went to college. One of my aunt got married under the Jim Crow law. She and her husband bought lots of land. They had like 15, 16, or 17 children. All of them went to college. It's a lie that that Jim Crow was holding black people back. That's made up by the deceivers in order to control the black people for their own personal gain.
In your community growing up in Alabama, was it predominantly black?
It was all black.
And was your school predominantly black?
All black.
So this is a great image of something that is not systemic racism. It's something that fits outside of the narrative of Jim Crow laws. When you're able to function in a sadly segregated environment where it's all black, those are the opportunities where you're able to access more avenues of power and opportunity for black people.
But we still hung out with the whites. We knew that all white people were bad. It was just the Democratic government that was trying to hold the blacks back. But it wasn't all white people.
Maybe so. And even your ideals that I do believe you're conflating your admiration for white people or your likability of with white people.
Because they haven't done anything to the blacks.
Right, but you're conflating that, like liking the person, liking the group, with a systemic issue, an institution, these laws. So although you can succeed, and sometimes arguably like from ideals of Malcolm X and partially Martin Luther King Jr., the idea is that black people can't succeed if they are actually integrated. And that's almost like the epitome image of that, the spitting image of that. So that's a beautiful image that you saw growing up and you were able to be in an all black environment and see complete success. I'll give you an example. Growing up in California where there was nothing that was practically segregated, I personally loved growing up in a very diverse environment. I had a neighbor who was Filipino, married to a black man. I had a neighbor across the street who was a Polynesian family, one from Guam, Chinese family, and a white lady down the street that I called grandma. I love that environment, but I have to be honest, I never on a consistent basis saw images of black success. The most images of black success I saw were my parents, and my parents didn't complete their second degrees until I was older, like through high school. And growing up I grew up basically in Oakland and Richmond, between Oakland, Richmond, and Vallejo, California. Richmond has some of the highest levels of drug use, and it's a predominantly black and Latino community. Those are the images I have of what experiences my black people have had in integrated communities. And I believe that is what you will see most likely, like the images of what you're talking about, because you're working under the system of systemic racism. When you had the chance to be segregated, you completely remove yourself out of that institution. But going back to your question about President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama.
Big Mama.
Some of the most educated president and first lady pair that we have ever had in the nation's history.
What?
She went to Princeton undergrad and Harvard for law school. And he went to Columbia and Harvard for law school as well. We have never had a first lady so educated, let alone even graduate from one Ivy League institution, but to do it twice. But that also is an image that is put on black people that you have to be the exceptional. You have to be the two-time Ivy League graduate.
No, that's not true.
Ever achieve success.
That's not true.
Have you ever tried to be a lawyer?
I didn't want to be. I could have been one had I wanted to. But you hit the nail on the head when you said your parents were your image. We are not supposed to be looking outside for other people to be our example. Our parents are supposed to be the example. Unfortunately, black people are not getting married. They're having these babies out of wedlock. The black woman is mean and out of control. So they don't have good examples in their homes. That's why they're failing.
The fact that you said that, I was prepared for you to at least say that. But I've had friends who have had some of the most educated parents, who are doctors, who are some of the first Black doctors in the city, who are lawyers. We went through the same high school institution. Our high school was one of the most prestigious high schools in the country. They came from two-parent households as well. Both parents had the most education, the most money, the most capital, and the most accessibility to whatever they wanted to do. But they chose a very different lifestyle. And one, unfortunately...
Well, that means that the parents were no good. Just because you have an education, some of the worst people in our country today are educated people. I have even suggested to men... There's a lot of young men who want to get married. I tell them all the time, do not marry an educated woman. She will not make for a good wife and a good mother. Because most educated women, they don't have character. They are in competition with the man. And so they don't make good parents. And the women don't make good wives. Maybe they did have a degree, but they had no common values or common sense.
Well, having common values... And then an issue of whether or not they make a good mother, I think, are completely different issues. But
have you noticed that educated women don't make good mothers and good wives and good mothers?
My mother was the most phenomenal mother. And she's the reason why that I am in the position that I am in life today.
I bet you your father doesn't feel that way. I bet you your father doesn't feel that way about your mother being a phenomenal woman.
He says it. He makes sure it's known in different ways.
He's scared. He's scared. He married to his mama. He's afraid of her.
My father is an amazing provider, and he is one of the strongest men that I know.
I bet he can't deal with your mother.
He has never let a downtime or an educated person or woman ever intimidate him from doing anything.
I bet your mother intimidate him.
Not at all.
I got to ask you these things before the time is out here. Are you surprised to see Black people and white people following or even listening to this very radical far-left group that's worse than the KKK, Black Lives Matter? Because Black Lives Matter was founded by a bunch of Black fat lesbians, angry, evil lesbians. And now you have the Black people, especially Black people, and some white people, Antifa, another radical organization, Black Lives Matter is worse than the KKK. Are you surprised to see people destroying the country listening to Black Lives Matter?
There's so many things you said there, but I'll address at least the last portion of it. We have to, before we can allow that comparison between KKK and the Black Lives Matter to go on.
Yes.
Talk about what the KKK actually is. An arm of the KKK is all about protecting the spaces for white Anglo-Saxon males. So that means keeping their jobs, keeping their families intact, their schools, keeping their schools white as possible and their communities as calm and as white as possible. And they do it by any means necessary. And usually those means are simply violent means. Simply. Like their image is from hiding their faces and burning things, carrying a burning cross, and wreaking havoc through violent acts of terrorism, killing people.
But how do you explain this lesbian group, though?
Their themes. That's their only aim, is to protect their things by any means necessary.
But this lesbian group...
By doing it because they recognize their terrorist acts.
But this radical lesbian group is about destroying things.
Black Lives Matter. Let's talk about Black Lives Matter. They have pillars of what they're asking for. They're a non-violent direct action organization, meaning that they use peaceful protests in everything.
Oh, destroying property is peaceful?
You're talking about a riot that you saw, and you're putting a label on every group as if they are Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter is actually a very small group, but mind you, there's probably a total million people who have been protesting outside in the past couple of weeks or past 2 weeks or so. All of those people are not Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter were organized when they're organized, and they're people who meet on a consistent weekly basis. They can't have a million people sitting there in meetings every week.
Well, I know there are other groups.
Organized organization. They do not condone violence. They do not condone acts of terrorism. They do not condone even looting.
Well, why don't we hear them denouncing it then if they don't condone it?
The organization to tell you what they're doing. But Black Lives Matter, from what I understand, you never will see them in front of a news camera because a part of their organization is to dismantle systemic racism and dismantle the institutions that uphold it. And so you'll never really see them being at a rally or stepping up on a stage ever to speak about their values, because in that moment, they're acknowledging that platform that they're standing on and giving credit to the institution for which they're trying to bring down. So you'll never actually see it unless you actually do your research in terms of probably going to their website or following up on the people, because there's literature. One of the actual founders, Dr. Melinda Abdul, she actually is an educator. She's a professor, and she writes a lot on this. So you could probably look into that. But there,
well, we tried to get her on the show, but she's a coward. And we have had some of the Black Lives Matter, Patrice.
You would never hear from her, but she would never see her in this space. You would never see her in this space because part of the Black Lives Matter movement is that they have no interest in engaging and giving power to entities that only seek to dismantle them or to undermine them.
Did you know that Black Lives Matter was founded by a bunch of fat black lesbians?
Women?
Yeah, radical lesbian. I don't think they would want you to call them women.
So what is your problem with a person?
No, but
a person is simply different than you.
No, not nothing at all. But I'm just surprised that the world is following a bunch of fat black lesbians, radical lesbians, and they are burning down the country following these people. I'm stunned at that. I just never thought I would see that, because black lesbians, fat black lesbians, radical ones, don't have any values. Satan is their daddy. They hate men. They hate the order of the family. There's nothing good about them. I'm surprised that in a Judeo-Christian nation that you would see people following these people. No wonder they're so destructive.
Oh, Mr. Jesse, I don't got nothing to say to that.
Did you know it was started by a bunch of black lesbians?
I knew it was started by women. I knew it was started
by
women.
How about lesbian women?
I knew it was started by queer women and people who are also outside of the periphery of our ideal activist or leader of a movement. And that is the epitome of the Black Lives Matter. It's starting a conversation about the lives who have always been left out of the conversation by the very voices who never were treated like they had a voice.
What do you think about white people bowing down to these blacks and kissing their feet and washing their feet and all in the name of Jesus? What do you think about, what's your impression of whites who are doing that with the blacks, to the blacks?
You know, Jesus was an activist in his right as well. That's why he was crucified. And when Jesus came into the space, he was definitely opposed. And his message was definitely about taking one of being humble in every way. And it sounds like you're repeating a message about humility. And no matter who a person is, I am also a Christian, but no matter who a person is or whatever way of life they live, I believe in the same Christ-like message of you give love. Love on that person. You love the person.
So you call it white people Jesus?
Excuse me?
Are you calling white people Jesus? You're saying that the whites are like Jesus?
No, I'm saying that what you're repeating sounds like the same type of message.
But it's the white
message of humility and love and understanding and coming together for issues of justice.
But it was Jesus cleaning the other people's feet. In this case, it's white people doing it to blacks. Are you saying that the whites are acting like Jesus?
No, I'm not making that correlation between person to person. I'm just talking about the ideal, the message behind it.
Oh, it's time for me to heat up this interview, Alicia, and put you on the hot seat. I need you to answer these as quickly as possible, all right?
Okay.
The hot seat.
What's more important, being truthful or being nice?
Being truthful.
Is America the greatest country in the world?
It can be, but definitely not.
Is it easier to manipulate the emotions of black people?
No.
Does formal education destroy God-given common sense?
No.
Do you love white people?
Yes.
Should homosexuality be taught in the schools?
I think personhood should be taught in schools.
Should homosexuality be taught in the schools?
I don't know what you mean by that. I don't think it's a curriculum.
Should homosexuality be taught in the schools?
I don't know what you mean by that.
You a lawyer. You went to Howard. You should be smart by now.
In law, we're taught about words and not to use too broad of vague words. And homosexuality is such a vague word.
Oh, it is. Would you ever date a white man?
I would date a person I'm in love with, so yes.
Would you ever date a white man?
Yes.
Would you marry a white man?
Yes, if I actually connect with them.
In American society today, who has it easier, men or women?
Definitely men.
Is it racist for white Americans to be proud of their heritage?
Is it racist? Yes, when it's built off of violence and hurting the other chances of other people.
Is it racist for white Americans to be proud of their heritage?
Yes, because pride of heritage for a white American in America is about hurting another person.
Is it racist for black Americans to be proud of their heritage?
No, because we never had a heritage from the point that we stepped foot in America.
Do you love the great white hope?
I don't know what that is.
The president. President Trump, do you love President Trump?
I don't know if we have a president right now, but that man who has the hat, I don't care for him.
Do you love President Trump?
No.
You said no?
God loves him.
Are you a Christian?
I am.
And you don't love the president?
I send him love.
But you don't love him?
I love through truth. But if I love the great white hope. And you're asking if I love the president. Trump can have all the love he wants.
Are you okay with social media companies censoring conservatives? But not liberals.
I don't. Well, that sounds like a free speech issue. It's not fair when one side is being censored or one isn't, but it depends on what type of conservative speech. Is it hate speech? Then yes, it should be censored.
Are you okay with social media companies censoring conservatives but not liberals?
Yes, when it's hate speech.
Are illegal aliens a threat to black people in this country?
No, and they are people. They're not aliens.
Are you okay with Mexicans hating blacks?
People have their values. Yes.
You okay with that?
People have their values. I'm not okay with anyone hating anyone, but I can't control what they choose to do. The same way I can control a white person hating a black person.
Is it sexist for a man to tell a woman she's beautiful?
No.
I'm sorry?
No.
You are a beautiful woman.
Thank you, Mr. Jesse.
Isn't she beautiful? Your sister looks just like you?
She does.
You're identical twins?
It's a little, it's weird, but yes. Physically, we're identical. Yes.
Amazing. Well, you're a beautiful woman. Thank you for taking the hot seat on. Did you have fun?
I did.
Well, congratulations again on becoming an attorney. Tell the people how they can get in contact with you, whatever information you want to put out there.
So you can jump on my Instagram at legally.leisha. If you're in my DMs with some crazy stuff, you will get blocked.
Amazing. Well, I really appreciate you coming on again. And we're going to have you back. And I really wish you well. And hopefully you'll become an attorney for all people. And not just black folks. You will be a lawyer for all people, right?
Yes, I represent. represent everyone. One of my clients is actually white.
Oh, good. All right. Well, I really wish you well, and good luck on your test coming up.
Thank you. Right. Thank you so much, Jesse.
You're welcome. God bless you.
You too.
Thank you. Amazing. Thank you all for tuning in, folks. I absolutely appreciate it. Let me hear from you. And don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, Patreon, ring the bell for a notification, and all of that good stuff. I have a merch and all of that. Thank you so much. Take care.
Next time on The Fallen State.
AME is African Methodist, right?
African Methodist Episcopal Church. To have that righteous heart, that perfect spirit, that passion to follow the ways of God.
Is homosexuality, LGBTQ, is that right or wrong?
I will just say that it's not right in the scripture.
Did you know that Black Lives Matter is a far-left liberal radical organization founded by fat black lesbians?
I don't see that. That's relevant.
You are reverend and you shouldn't follow evil, right?
Are you saying they're evil because of their preference?
Because of their purpose, to destroy and not to build.
To belittle the organization helps nobody.
Are you saying that I'll be littered by telling you that it was founded by a bunch of fat black lesbians?
You're looking for the destruction of the black community.
Thanks for watching The Fallen State. We need your continued support. Donate to my nonprofit here. Subscribe and like the videos here. And tell everybody and their mama about the show.